Chapter 12. Word came, and in the ashes I finally straightened and looked upon those few of my children left standing. The throne of shadows was no more, and out from the twilight flew dragons, filling the air with cries of rage and frustration. I knew then that he had done it. He had cheated them all, but at what cost? I looked at the heaps of corpses, a monstrous high watermark upon this cursed strand. Blood ran in streams down the slope to where crimson-streaked light cascaded, where all the wounds still gaped. Another wave was coming. We could not hold. Down from the forest, at that moment of deepest despair, came a trio of figures. I faced them, and from my ravaged soul there was born hope's glimmer. Excerpt, Book 11, Throne, Scepter and Crown, Rise Harat, Coral Trove. Pithy staggered clear, sheathed in blood. The blistering white of the strand shocked her, tilting and rocking before her eyes. She fell to her knees, and then onto her side. She let go of her sword, but the grip clung to her hand a moment longer before sobbing loose. With her other hand she tugged off her helm. The blade cut was a slit scoring right through the dented iron. Strands of bloody hair and the tufted padding of her underhelm filled the gap. She let her head drop back, the terrible sounds of battle fading. Overhead the sky spun. Torn fragments of light drifted in the gloom.
Ah, Brev, he warned us. In that way of his, he warned us. Back and forth he walked, drawing and sheathing and drawing that damned sword over and over again. You can think about what's to come. You can try and picture it in your mind. What warriors did, what soldiers walked into. But none of it readies you. None of it.
The screaming seemed far away now. The surge and terrible clatter, the maw of the breach, a mass of blades, spear and sword, knife and axe, and all that mouth did was chew people to bloody bits, those iron fangs clashing and grinding. There was no end to its appetite.
So long as there's more people to shove into it.
Her body felt hot, the sweaty gambeson chafing under her arms. She could smell her own reek.
So we called ourselves captains, did we, Brev? Good at giving orders, good at standing around looking important. There with the prince, with his knot of elite soldiers he now calls his watch. Me and you, Brevity, we were officers in an army of fools.
Blood ran warm to pool in her ears, first the one on the left, then the one on the right. Other sounds were drowned in the deluge.
Is that the ocean I'm hearing? An ocean of blood? Is this, I wonder, the last thing we ever hear? Dear ocean, then, call my soul. I would swim the waters again. Let me swim the waters again.
Something trembled the sands beneath her.
No, they won't quit. They want through, just like he said.
She was no captain. She knew nothing about what being a real captain meant. From that first moment, when the breach opened, when light flared out like a tongue of fire, and all those voices from beyond the barrier ripped through. She saw Yedan Derig marching down to the breach. His watch had been arrayed, positioned as squad leaders in the forward line of Lethary volunteers, and there was withal, moving quickly back up the ravaged slope into the forest.
Word to the Queen of Carcanus. The battle begins.
Pithy's attention returned to the breach.
Stick the mercenaries to the front, in a place where there's no retreat except through your more loyal soldiers. They're there for the loot to come, but loot never held any man or woman. Not for long, not when it all rips open. These Lethary Islanders, they're my people, mine.
She took up her sword as she ran down to that first high berm. The weapon in her hand never felt right. It frightened her, in fact. She dreaded spitting herself as much as she did some snarling enemy's spear thrust. Where was brevity? Somewhere in the rush.
We're like a kicked-over nest of termites.
Someone was wailing. A mother whose child has just pulled loose from her embrace has just vanished into the press with a sword and shield, a spear or a pike.
It's a scene of the world, every world. On the other side of the barrier, some mother screams her fear, loses sight of her cherished one.
She stumbled, dropped to one knee, vomited into the crushed bones of the beach. Coughing, spitting, feeling a strange hollowness inside, blossoming outward until it felt as if her brain was attached to nothing, floating free of her body. She could hear a roar, the sound of battle. No, she'd never heard it before, not like this. The flight from the coast back in Lether had been nothing like this. Back then, the voices and the will had come from pain and fear, from broken needs. It had possessed a plaintive timber. Against the discipline of Yedan Derek and his elites, those wretched foes had not stood a chance. This was different. The sound that erupted from the breach was by itself enough to drive the defenders back a step. Triumph and rage, they were through. At last through. And the hated enemy would not stop them, would not even slow them. With the mass of their comrades driving them from behind, with the slashing spear points dropping horizontal before them, the Tistiliosan poured from the wound. Pithy forced herself back onto her feet, forced herself forward. She was still floating free, but her vision seemed impossibly sharp. She saw the front line of Lethary lifting bizarrely into the air, saw their heads tilting back, their mouths wide open, lifted on the spears of the enemy. The sword slipped from her hand. Numbed, confused, she spun to retrieve it. Someone collided with her, knocked her down. She coughed on a lungful of dusty sand. Where was her sword? There. She crawled over to it. The grip was gritty, biting into her palm. Pithy wiped at her hand, looked over at the breach. Somehow the Lethary line was still there. They were fighting back. They were holding the Leosan on the berm slope. The press from their own side was vicious, pushing to hold and then pushing to advance. Gaps opened here and there and torn bodies were carried back out, limbs dragging. The two witches were now among the wounded. Each held a dagger in one hand. Pithy watched Squish kneel beside an injured woman, leaning close to examine a wound. With a shake of her head, she slid the knife into the Lethary's chest, straight into her heart, then moved on to the next casualty.
"You fucking murderers!"
Pulley was stuffing bandages into a hole in a man's side, shouting for stretcher-bearers. A second station for the wounded was forming higher up the strand, where cutters worked to staunch bleeding, stitch gashes and saw off ruined limbs. Nearby was a pit dug into the sand, for those severed limbs and for those wounded no one could save.
"It's organized. They planned for this. Yes, I remember now. We all planned for this. For what's happening right now."
Pithy scrambled forward again.
"They're holding," she gasped. "They're holding. Captain!"
A boy ran up to her. She'd never seen him before. He was frighteningly thin, with sores crusting his mouth. A Lethary.
"Who sent you?" she demanded. "Corporal Knife of the Watch, right anchor, has been wounded and pulled from the line, sir. The Prince needs you to immediately take up command of those flank squads, sir."
"Errant's push."
She licked her lips. Her bladder was stinging as if everything it held had turned into acid. She looked down at her sword.
"Sir?"
The damned boy was staring at her. Those weeping sores around his mouth, the smears on his face. She could see that he was terrified. An orphan whose new family was being killed before his very eyes. He had carried the prince's words. He had found her, done what Yedan had asked of him. He was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
"Following orders. Holding on to duty. As desperate as the rest of us. Stop looking at me like that. Lead me through," she said,
and like a boy eager for the beach, he took her hand and led her forward. The smell of the heaving press made her choke. The sweat and spewed vomit, the fear and the shit and the piss. How could anyone fight in this? Pithy almost pulled herself loose from the boy's cold grip. But now hands were pushing at her from behind. Faces lunged close, shouting things. Eyes met her own, filled with pleading. Panic roiled in like a grey, grainy cloud. Her knees found a figure down on all fours. As she struggled to step over him, she looked down. Unwounded by any weapon but terror itself, the realization triggered a surge of fury. She halted and twisted round.
"Get up, you worthless pile of shit! They're dying up there! For you! On your feet!"
And this time she managed to prise her hand loose from the boy's. Reaching down, she took the man by the hair.
"Stand up! You're with me! Let's go!"
Those close by were watching, staring. She saw things harden in their eyes and wondered what that was about.
"Lead on, lad! Front line, quick! You, soldier, don't even think of pulling back!"
"Listen to me, like I know what I'm doing, like I done this before."
She heard voices around her now. "Look, captain's here."
"Captain Pithy, see her? There."
"She choked a coward."
"Killed him."
"Pithy killed a coward right in front of my eyes."
"Gods below," she muttered.
The boy glanced back at her as he struggled to push between two leathery men. His eyes were suddenly bright. And then all at once she could see spear points flashing as they rocked up from impacts with shields, lashing out, clashing with swords and Andean pikes. For the first time she caught a glimpse of a Leosan face, long, narrow, stretched. But,
"Errant, they look like the Andi. They look just like them."
White-skinned instead of black-skinned.
"Is that it? Is that the only fucking difference?"
Those eyes locked on her own, pale blue and frighteningly young, above the struggling press between them. And she saw his fear, his terrible, horrifying fear.
"No," she murmured. "Don't do this. Go back, please."
An axe blade slammed into the side of the Leosan's head. Bones folded in around sundered flesh. Blood sprayed from eye, nose and mouth. The lone visible eye still staring at her suddenly went blank, sightless, and he fell down out of her sight. Pithy moaned. Tears rose inside her. Her sinuses closed up, forcing her breaths to her mouth. She couldn't get enough air. She could barely see through the blur. And the light was pouring down, mottled by shadows, pouring down and down. A leathery woman reached back and closed a bloody grip on her wrist, pulling her forward.
"Corporal Knight said he'd be back soon, sir."
Was this going to be a conversation? She could see the fighting, right there, almost within reach. Where had the boy gone? Nowhere in sight. Her coward. There, suddenly in the front line and screaming as he brought a shield round to block a savage thrust.
"What happened to him?"
"Captain?"
"Knight, what happened to him?"
"Got a hand cut off, sir. Went to get it scabbed. Said he'd be back soon."
The woman faced front again, raised her voice.
"Captain Pithy's in command!"
No one seemed to heed that announcement. And then Pithy felt the air change, as if her ears had popped. Something seethed up around her and then outward. From nowhere and everywhere there came a roar, and the flank lurched, heaved into the face of the Leosan front. As if caught in a current, Pithy was pulled forward. She stepped on something that rolled underfoot. Looked down. The boy stared up at her. But no, he was staring up at nothing. Around his gaping mouth, the sores were black with dirt.
"No, clean those up."
And then the bodies underfoot were Leosan, twisted, curled round welters of blood and gaping wounds, broken spear shafts, soiled clothing, empty faces. She could hear other roars, and she knew, that the entire leathery line was driving forward, one section after another.
"Go back to your hole, you poor miserable dogs! Go back!" she shouted. "Back! This is ours! This is ours!"
And all at once that cry was taken up. She saw the Leosan reel before it, saw the enemy ranks buckling as the leathery surged into them again and again. A sudden gap before her. A Leosan, settling on one knee, one shoulder sliced open, down through the joint, the arm hanging. Seeing her, he struggled to rise. He was old, his face lined, and the look in his eyes was bleak. Pithy's sword swing was awkward, but all of her strength was behind it. She clipped the edge of his jaw before the blade cut deep into his neck. Blood spurted, gushed all over her. Shocked by the hot deluge, she stepped back. And that one step saved her life. A spear thrust caught her head, bit into her helm. She felt the blade edge cut into her scalp, grind along the bone of her skull, and then she was pulled away. A burly man dragged her close.
"Never mind that. You still got your head, don't you? Seen my sword?" he asked. "I dropped the fucker. You'll know it 'cause it's still in my hand. Never mind."
He bent down and came up with a woodcutter's axe.
"Errant's horse-humped earhole. What the fuck is this? Never mind. To the back line with you, Captain Pithy. I started this and I mean to finish it up."
"Knife? Never mind, knife? Is that what they call you?"
"This is ours," the chant went on and on. Hands took hold of her. She was being pulled out. Her first engagement against the Leosan. Her first taste of everything. The slaughter, the hurt, the anger, the falling light.
All of it. All of it. Oh, gods, all of it.
Suddenly she stumbled clear. Winced at the blinding glare of the strand as tendrils of agonizing light writhed overhead. Down onto her knees, down onto her side, sword and helmet away, sounds dimming, fading. Someone drove a pair of knees against her left hip. Blinking, she looked up at Squish, saw the knife in the witch's gore-drenched left hand.
"Don't even think it,"
Pithy said in a growl. The witch grinned, then was gone. The last end of the rout, a scattering of Leosan, converging as they dragged wounded comrades back through the breach, vanishing into blinding light. Yedan Derig's sword was unaccountably heavy in his hand, so he let the tip crunch down into the soaked strand.
"Prince! Address that front line, sergeant! Get our wounded and dead out of there!"
He glared at the breach, the blackened, weeping Mar in Lightfall. Too damaged to do anything as miraculous as heal before his eyes, but the first probe of the enemy had been denied. The Leosan had taken as many of their dead and dying with them as they could, but there were still scores and scores, bodies heaped up at the base of the first berm.
"Get a crew to start piling them up against the breach. Make a wall, but tell them to be careful. Make sure the fallen are actually dead or near enough as to make no difference."
"Yes, sir."
He lifted his gaze as a shadow crossed the lightfall, just above the wound, bared his teeth. A new voice spoke beside him.
"That was closer than I liked, Prince."
He turned.
"Bedak, was it you behind that last push?"
"Far right flank," the woman said.
"Knife? Could have sworn that was a woman's shout."
"Knife got his hand chopped off. Didn't bleed out, thankfully. Captain Pithy took that flank command, sire. Knife made it back in time to drive a wood axe into the skull of one of the last Leosan on that side. Hard enough to break the handle."
Yedan frowned.
"What's a wood axe doing in our ranks? My orders on weapon choices were clear enough. That reminds me. Sergeant, collect up the better Leosan weapons, will you?"
"Got plans with your trophy, Prince?"
"What trophy?"
She nodded down at his sword. He glanced at it. A Leosan head was impaled on the blade, from the top of the skull down and out through the neck, which had already been half severed. He grunted.
"No wonder it felt heavy."
Yan Tovis stood at the forest verge, watching them dragging bodies clear, watching others tossing limbs and rolling corpses into the pit. None of it seemed real. The triumphant and suddenly exhausted leathery ranks along the berm were settling to catch their breaths, to check on weapons and armor, to take the skins of water from the youths now threading through the ranks.
"They think they've won."
Without Yedan and his watch, that front line would have quickly crumpled. Instead, the survivors now felt bold, filled to bursting. In this one clash, something had been tempered. She knew what she was seeing. A fighting force cannot be simply assembled. It needed that brutal forge, and it needed all its fires quenched in the blood of battle. Her brother was making something here. But it would not be enough. She could see how her own sheikh were looking on, no different from Jan Tovis herself. Yedan was not about to expend the Lethary ranks as if they were useless skirmishers, not with what he'd now made of them. He would pull them back, holding them in reserve during the next battle.
They probed to test our mettle. Next time, we will see their true fury. And if that beachhead is established, then the first dragon will come through.
Her sheikh watched, yes, and thought about their own time to come, their own stand against the Leosan. Few of the Lethary were trained as soldiers, and that was no different from the sheikh. But Yedan's watch would be there, solid as standing stones.
Until they start falling, they can only do so much. They're Yedan's most precious resource, but he must risk them each time. And as they begin to fall, why, he'll have a new crop of veterans to draw upon. These very Lethary here, and then from among our own sheikh. It's so very logical. But, dear brother, it's what you do best, isn't it? How can I kneel to this? By doing so, do I not make it all inevitable? No, that I will not do. But I will take my place among my people, on that berm. I know how to fight. I might not be Yedan's equal in that, but I'm damned close. It's carved into the souls of the royal line, to stand here upon the first shore. To stand here and to die.
They were stacking Leosan corpses, making a wall across the breach. The contempt of that gesture was as calculated as everything else Yedan did.
Rage is the enemy. Beware that, Leosan. He will make your rage your downfall if he can. You cannot make my brother angry. He's not like you. He's not like any of us. And his army will follow his lead. They will look to him and take inside what he gives. It's cold, lifeless. They'll take it in and it will change them all. Your army, brother, my people, I can't win this, but neither can you.
She collected her sword belt from the stump of a felled tree, strapped it on, settled the helm on her head and fastened the clasp, tugged on her gauntlets. Her people took note. They faced her now, and watched as their queen prepared to fight.
But what are they thinking? Why do they even look to us? My brother, me, see where our love for them has taken them. See all those limp, lifeless bodies tumbling into the pit.
They watched this calm, silent woman readying for battle. They didn't know, of course, about all the howling going on in her head, the anguished screams and the poisoned helplessness eating at every hidden edge. No, they knew nothing about any of that. She saw her brother, gesturing, giving orders. He turned then, and across the distance he faced her. Should she lift a hand, acknowledge his achievement, this first triumph? Should she draw her sword, perhaps, and lift it high? Would he respond in kind?
Not a chance. But then, look at me. We see each other, yes, and neither of us does a thing to reach across. How can we? We are co-conspirators in the slaughter of all these people.
Jan Tovis turned, found one of her messengers.
Arras, deliver the news to Queen Drukorlat. The breach was repelled. Acceptable losses. We await their next attack.
The young girl bowed and then hurried off into the forest. When twilight looked back down to the strand, her brother was nowhere in sight. It was now a road of sorts, the white dust soaked in blood, churned into reddish-brown mud, straight as a spear shaft between Serranus' wedding gate and the breach. Shivering, Aparal Forge watched the wagons burdened with the wounded drawing closer. To either side of the narrow track, the massed legions prepared for the real assault. Heads turned to watch the broken remnants of the forlorn hope file past. Well, that was proof enough, was it not? Carcanus was occupied once more. The infernal sheikh had returned, or someone much like them, and were determined to contest the breach. Madness, all of it. Glancing up, he saw 4 of the 13 still veered, their vast wings flashing gold in the ceaseless light. The draconian blood had finally taken them, he knew. They had surrendered forever to the chaos. Among them was Ipath Erul, who had once been a friend.
"Son of light," he whispered, "beware your chosen, now that the blood of the Elaint rises to drown all that we once were."
The door behind him swung open, cracking against the stone wall. Aparal flinched, but did not turn round.
"If you had followed, brother." "But I did, son of light."
Khadagar Phant swore, was suddenly beside Aparal, hands settling on the alabaster merlon.
"That last pass. We were almost through. See my children still on the wing? Where are the others?"
"Lord, the mane of chaos frightens them. If they surrender to it for too long, son of light, you could lose control of them."
"When I am veered, they will comprehend my power, my domination. What more is needed to bend them to my will? Do you truly believe that I do not understand the nature of the Elaint?"
"The risk, Lord.
It frightens you, does it, brother?"
"I fear we might lose control of our own people, Lord, and not through any flaw in our purpose or leadership. Ipath Erul and his sisters no longer symbol. The blood of the Elaint has taken them. It has stolen their minds. When they cease to be Tist Leosan, how soon before our cause becomes meaningless? How soon before they find their own ambitions?"
Khadagar Phant said nothing for some time. Then he leaned forward over the wall and looked straight down.
"It has been some time," he said in a musing tone, "since we last set a traitor upon the White Wall. Brother, do you think my people begin to forget? Must I remind them again?"
Aparal Forge thought about it.
"If you feel it necessary, Lord."
He held his gaze on the column crawling towards the wedding gate.
"This is new,"
the Son of Light said.
"Lord,
I see no answering fear in you, brother."
"The mane of chaos, you fool. It devours fear like bloody meat. I am as ever your servant, Lord."
"So much so, I now see, that you would risk your own life to speak your mind."
"Perhaps, as I once did long ago, when we were different people, not yet who we are now. If so, then I will add this. The day you cease to hear me will be the day that we will have lost."
Khadagar's voice was so quiet that Aparal barely made out what he was saying.
"Are you that important, brother?"
"I am now, Lord."
"Why?"
"Because I am the last among your people to whom you still listen, Lord. You look down upon this cursed wall, and what do you see? Brave warriors who disagreed with you, the rotting remnants of our priesthood."
Khadagar whispered.
"They opposed the path of the Elaint."
"They did, Lord, and now they are dead, and 4 of the 13 will not return."
"I can command them."
"As it pleases them to appear loyal, so that shall remain, Lord."
Veiled eyes lifted to meet his gaze.
"You draw close, Brother Aparal Forge, so very close."
"If my counsel is treason, then condemn me, Lord. But you will not see fear, not in me, not any more, and never again."
Khadagar Phant snarled and then said,
"There is not time for this. The legions are ready, and I need you down there commanding the assault. The enemy beyond the breach was surprisingly weak."
"Weak, Lord?"
"I will accept bold words from you, brother, but not outright rudeness."
"Sorry, Lord."
"Weak. Indeed, it seems they are not even true sheik, devoid of Tist blood entirely. It is my thought that they are mercenaries, hired because the Andii now in Karkanas are too few to personally oppose us. In fact, I now believe that the sheik are no more,
gone like a nightmare before the dawn.
They fought surprisingly well for mercenaries, lord.
Humans are like that, brother. Decide on something and there's no moving them. You have to cut down every last one of them, until not one is left breathing.
The surest way to win an argument,
Aparal commented. Khadagar reached over and gripped his upper arm.
Better. Return to the living, old friend. Today we shall gain the shore. Tonight we shall dine in the high palace of Carcanus.
Lord, may I descend to take command of the legions?
Go, brother. You shall see me soon enough, flying above you.
Aparal hesitated.
Lord, might I speak one last word of advice?
Khadagar's face clouded, but he nodded.
Do not be the first of our 13 through the breach. Leave that to Ipath Erul, or one of his sisters.
But why?
Because the enemy knows that we are here. Soul taken or true Elaint, they will have plans to deal with our eventual arrival, lord. Use Erul to discover it. We cannot risk losing you, son of light.
Khadagar's pale eyes searched his, and then he smiled.
Friend, it shall be as you say. Go now.
Father Light, is this what you want? What was in your mind when you walked out from the city, through the gate that would be named for the day of your wedding, for your procession's path into the realm of dark? Did you ever imagine that you would bring about the end of the world? Take the scepter in hand. Walk to the throne. There is an old saying, every crown leaves a circle of blood. I always wondered what it meant. Where was that circle? Surrounding the one now ruling, or closer still, like razors against the brow?
Aparal Forge walked along one verge of the blood path. He could have veered into his dragon form. He could have wheeled out from the high wall and in moments settled before the breach, those old scattered stones of the toppled edifice with all the joyous carvings. But what would that be saying to his warriors?
You are indeed led by dragons, by the blood-tainted, by the devourers of Kesselbahn.
But was he not Tist Leosan?
I am. For now, for as long as I can hold on. And I'd rather show them that. I'd rather they see me here walking.
The soldiers were ready. He could see as much. He sought to draw strength from them, reassurance, all the confidence he would need to in turn command them, as they in turn did when seeing him.
I must speak to them, fashion words. What shall I say? Mercenaries await us, humans. They can be broken, for their will has been bought. And if it is to be something to bargain with, like a comforting robe, then that will cannot be worth much when all comfort vanishes. No, make it simpler. Tell them that coin cannot purchase righteousness. Against our will, the humans shall falter. We must simply push hard enough for long enough. Speak with confidence, yes. And then I will think of love's lost, to empty out all the places inside me, ready to be filled with fury and desire.
The Leosan knew enough about humans. Through the piercing of the veil, such as a priest or mage occasionally achieved, they had ventured into human worlds. Testing the notions of justice, as one old scout had once said, small parties of aimless purpose or singular intent, journeying often enough for these explorers to return with knowledge of the strange, weak, but profligate human creatures. Short-lived and truncated of thought. Incapable of planning ahead beyond a few years at most, and more commonly barely capable of thinking past a mere stretch of days. There were always exceptions, of course. Great leaders, visionaries, tyrants. But even among them, the legacy they sought was more often than not a selfish one, the private glory of immortal notoriety or fame. Pathetic. As he approached the breach, Aperal wondered whether there was a great leader among these humans, these mercenaries. It was, of course, possible, but he doubted it. The once glorious gate had been shattered long ago. It had commemorated a marriage that had spilled more blood than could be imagined. Shattered three civilizations. Destroyed an entire realm. Father Light, could you but have known, would you have turned away? Would you have sacrificed your happiness for the sake of your people and hers? I like to think you would have. Yes, you would have sacrificed yourself because you were better than all of us. And now your children yearn to avenge your failure. But nothing we can do, nothing we can ever do, will make it better. No matter. We're not interested in healing old wounds. Look at that gate for proof of that. A space had been left clear before the breach. Of the wound itself, there was naught to be seen but stacked corpses, dim and ethereal through Lightfall's incessant bleeding. Seeing those bodies, Aperal scowled, and from deep inside him surged a rush of rage. Leosan, Draconian. He stepped into the space, turned towards his kin.
Brothers, sisters, see what these humans have done to our fallen. They choose not to honor us as worthy foes. They imagine this dread wall will wound us. The Son of Light looks down upon us from the White Wall's rampart. The Son of Light has said that on this day we shall conquer the realm of Dark. We shall conquer Carcanus. We know they are waiting. Shall we seek them out? Brothers, sisters, shall we seek them out?
The roar that answered him felt like a physical blow, but he welcomed it.
Their anger is without measure. Their justness is unassailable. Kadagar is right. We shall win through.
He faced the ruined gate and glared at the breach. Drawing his sword, he held it high.
Seventh Legion, arrow formation! Who leads?
A harsh voice called out behind him.
I lead, Aperal Forge! Galar Thro shall lead! Galar, I should have known. Galar, there is a commander among the humans. Find him, kill him. I so vow, Aperal Forge, I so vow.
The power massing behind him made Aperal tremble. This assault would sweep aside the humans, up and into the forest beyond, to the city itself. The palace splashed in blood. The Son of Light triumphant upon the throne, scepter in hand. And if Mother Dark dwelt in the temple, they would kill her.
We will not be stopped, not this time.
Shadows from above. He looked up, three dragons, and then a fourth.
So eager. Ipath Erul, I think you want that throne. I think you mean to take it. Leosan, Seventh Legion, level spears!
He turned, moved to the right. Galar was ready. They were all ready, bristling, straining for the signal, desperate to lunge forward, burst through the wall of corpses, burst out onto the shore, and begin the slaughter. Silent, Aperal Forge swung down the sword. Sandalath Drukolat, Queen of High House Dark, ruler of Carcanus, walked alone in the palace, wondering where all the ghosts had gone. They should be crowding these ancient halls, whispering along the corridors and passages, lurking in recesses and doorways. Struggling to recall what needed doing, calling out for loved ones in faint, echoing voices. She ran her hand along a wall as she walked, feeling the hard, polished stone. She was far beyond the rounds of the paltry staff now resident in the palace. Hunting ghosts, stone-like skin, but the skin is cold. She could remember when it was different, alive. Guards and guests, petitioners and servants, priestesses and midwives, retainers and scholars, hostages, swirling in their own precious currents, each and every one of them like blood in a beating heart. Her worn boots echoed as she made her way down a narrow corridor. Smaller now, this passage, and the steps she reached were shallow and worn, wending up in a tight spiral. She halted, gasping as a faint draught came down from above.
I remember this, the downdraft. I remember it, against my face, my neck, down round my bared ankles. I used to run. When was that? I must have been a child. Yes, a child. When was that?
Her right shoulder brushed against the wall again and again as she climbed. The sloped stone over her head felt oppressively close.
Why did I run?
Perhaps some inkling of the future. But for that child, there was no refuge. How could there be? Here she was, and the centuries upon centuries in between were now carved solid as this stone.
Stop running, child. It's done. Stop running. Even the memory hurts.
Sandalath reached the top floor, a small flagstone landing, a blackwood door set into an archway. The iron handle was shaped from three lengths of linked chains entwined, stiff enough to form a ring. She stared at it, remembering how at first she'd had to reach up to grasp it and tug hard to swing back the door.
Hostage room. Born into it, imprisoned within it, until the day you are sent away. The day someone comes and takes you. Hostage room, child. You didn't even know what that meant. No, it was your home.
Reaching out, she grasped the ring. A single tug and something broke on the other side, fell with a clunk.
Oh, no, no, no.
She opened the door. The bed had partially collapsed. Insects had chewed the covers until they fell to dust. Thousands of generations of those insects had dwelt in the mattress until it too crumbled to nothing. The creatures had eaten the wax candles in the silver sticks still standing on the solid blackwood dresser. Above the dresser, the polished mirror was mottled with midnight stains. The broad windows had been shuttered tight. Now little of that remained but heaps of fittings on the floor. Sandalath stepped inside. She could not see it yet, but she knew it was there.
Locked from the inside.
In the passageway leading to the tutor chamber, she found the small frail bones of this room's last hostage. The mice had eaten most of the child until little more than grey stains marked its position. A body sprawled between the two chambers. Teeth lay scattered like the beads of a broken necklace.
I know how it was for you. I know.
Slaughter in the citadel, screams rising from below, the smell of smoke. The world was ending.
Mother Dark turned away. Anomander's dreams of unification fell like dust through his fingers. The people were fleeing, fleeing Khorald Galain itself. The end of the world.
She crouched down in the narrow corridor, stared down at the remnants.
Child, are you me? No, I was long gone from here by then. Sent off to serve my purpose, but that purpose failed. I was among a mass of refugees on Galan's road. Blind Galan shall lead us to freedom. We need only follow the sightless seer. We need only trust in his vision. Oh, yes, child, the madness of that was, well, plain to see, but darkness was never so cold as on that day. And on that day, we were all blind.
The child hostage would not have left this room. She had learned obedience before all else. Told to stay, she had set the flimsy lock that she had believed would bar the outer door.
We all believed it, each in our turn. It was our comfort, our symbol of independence. It was a lock a grown Andy could break in one hand. But no one came to challenge your delusion of safety. The lock was proof against everything going on outside this room. It was, in fact,
the strongest barrier of all. She sank down further, leaned one shoulder against the passage wall. I am queen and I am hostage, both. No one can take me until they decide to. No one can break my lock until they need to. In the meantime, see me sitting so regal on my throne, frozen like an image in the frieze. But she would not weep, not for herself. All that running had taken her precisely to this place, this moment in time. All that running. After some time, she climbed to her feet, went back into the outer room, stared at what remained of herself in the mottled mirror. Fragments, pieces, an incomplete map. Look at me. Are you looking at me now, at last? I sense the stirring in your mind. Impatience, the wanting to be away, off somewhere else, anywhere but in this skull, anywhere but behind these eyes. What in your life has so chilled your heart that you so quickly refuse another's pain, another's loss? Run, then. Go on. Run away, skip down the passage, find all the places that stab deep enough to make you feel. Sandalath turned away, back to the door, down the spiraling descent. One didn't need ghosts, she decided. Not a single ethereal glimpse was necessary. Empty corridors and echoing chambers were in themselves ghosts, emerging in the instant of her arrival, only to fade away once she was past. Like the rooms of memory. Step inside, conjure what you see, wonder at what you feel, and then leave. But you take something with you. You always take something with you. Swirling, raising up dust. She wanted to howl. Mother Dark, I understand now. Once again, I am a hostage. She had died, drowned, in the rolling surf of a distant shore, the end of a long, harrowing journey, such an ignoble, pathetic end. Thrashing in darkness, shocking cold filling her lungs. Was that how it was? It must have been. Silcha's ruin came to us upon that road. Wounded, stricken, he said he had forged an alliance with an Edur prince, or was he king? If so, not for long. Emorlan was destroyed, torn apart. He too was on the run. An alliance of the defeated, of the fleeing. They would open a gate leading into another realm. They would find a place of peace, of healing. No throne to fight over, no scepter to wield, no crown to cut the brow. They would take us there. Salvation. She was in the habit, she realized, of rolling ashore, only to be dragged back into deeper waters. A place to drown, a place of peace, an end to the running. Was it coming again? Then, Mother Dark, I pray to you, make this time final. Grant me blessed oblivion, a place without war. Messengers found her in the hallway, urged her to return to the throne room. There was news of the breach. Withal awaited her. She walked as one dulled by debying, panelled scenes marching past on either side, as mottled as the mirror she had stared into so long ago now. Centuries ago. Draconian blood proved a dark tomb, didn't it? See how my thoughts wander? See how these memories haunt? Do you truly dream of resurrection? Alas! I cannot recommend it. Her husband's eyes studied her. Sand! I was exploring, she said, walking directly to seat herself on the throne. How bad, then?
The first assault was denied, he replied. Yedan's Lethary line held, and then pushed the Leosan back through the wound. The watch!
The watch, yes. I remember now. It was already in me, growing, wanting my love. But how could I love?
The Sheik have held, Lord. The watch commanded. They have driven the Leosan back through the wound.
The priestesses believe they have devised a means of sealing the rent lord.
Then they had better set about achieving that, Kalaraz. For the Leosan shall launch another assault soon, and then another, and another. They will keep coming until they are through, or until they are all dead.
Lord, is such the fury of Osirik against you that, Commander Kalaraz, this is not Osirik's doing. It is not even Father Light's. No, these are children who will have their way. Unless the wound is healed, there will be no end to their efforts.
And then Anamanda's eyes found her.
Hostage, he murmured,
gesturing all the others to leave. He rose from the throne.
I did not see you there. He released you then. I did not think...
No, Lord, she said. He did not release me. He abandoned me.
Hostage, Drukorlat?
I am a hostage no longer, Lord. I am nothing.
What did he do to you?
But she would not answer that, could not. He had enough troubles, did he not? Wars upon all sides, armies advancing on Carcanus. It was dying, all of it, dying, and in his eyes she could see that he knew it.
Sandalath Drukorlat.
And with her name he reached out, settled a cool hand upon her brow, and took from her the knowledge he sought.
No, he whispered, this cannot be.
She pulled away then, unable to meet his eyes, unwilling to acknowledge the fury now emanating from him.
I will avenge you.
Those words could well have driven a spear through her, for the impact they made. She reeled, with pain a raging fire within her. Shaking her head, she staggered away.
Avenge? I will have my own vengeance. I swear it.
He called out to her, but she fled the throne room and ran. Shallow steps climbing. A wooden door. A lock.
Sandalath?
The priestesses can heal the wound.
What priestesses?
The Leosan won't stop. Nothing can make them stop. The Watch knows. All the Sheik do. They have accepted it. They are going to die for us, every last one of them. We cannot permit that. Where is Galan? Where is Silchas? Where is my brother?
Then Withal's arms were about her, lifting her from the throne, holding her tight. She felt weak as a child, but he was strong, stronger than she'd ever imagined was possible for a human. She felt something crumble within her and let out a soft gasp.
I went looking for ghosts, she said. I found them, I think. Mother, help me. Save me. It's too much.
Sand.
The word was a sob.
We need to run, she said. That's all we need to do, my love. Run. Tell Twilight. Raise a flag of truce. I will yield Carcanus to the Leosan. They can have it, and I hope they burn it to the fucking ground.
Sand. This is Yedan's battle now, and he will not parley with a Leosan. He is a Sheik prince. He wields a hust blade. It was the witches who explained to me what that meant.
Hust? A hust sword? Did I know that? I must have. Did I?
Forged to slay Elaint. Without them, the Andi could never have killed all those dragons at the Sundering. They could never have fought back. Yedan's sword knows what's coming.
Stop it!
It's too late!
Yedan!
He knows, Sand. Of course he knows. The witches are desperate. Yan Tovis accepts none of this.
Because she's not a fool!
Sandalath pushed Withal back.
We need to run!
He shook his head. She glared round. Guards looked away. Servants ducked their heads. She bared her teeth.
You must think me mad, do you? But I'm not. I see now, as clearly as Yan Tovis does. Is this all the Sheik are to be to us? Wretched fodder doomed to fail? How dare we ask them to fight?
She spun, glared at the domed ceiling.
Mother Dark, how dare you?
The shout echoed, her only reply.
The Sheik will fight, said Withall into the silence that followed. Not for you, Sand. Not for the Queen of High House Dark. Not even for Carcanus. They will fight for their right to live. This once, after generations of retreating, of kneeling to masters. Sand, this is their fight.
Their deaths, you mean, don't you? Their deaths!
And they will choose where it is to be, Sand. Not me, not you.
What makes us do this? What makes us set aside the comforts of peace?
Sand, Withall said in a quiet voice, this is their freedom. This one thing, their freedom.
Go back to them, then,
she croaked, turning away.
Be their witness, Withall. They've earned that much at least. Remember all that you see for as long as there's life left to you.
My love,
no.
She shook her head, walking from the throne room.
Hostages. We are all hostages.
Yedan Derig leaned the blade of his sword against his shoulder, his jaws bunching rhythmically, his eyes narrowing as he studied the breach.
Signal the front lines. They're coming.
The blurred shapes of the dragons skittered like wind-torn clouds behind the veil of lightfall. He counted five in all, but suspected there were more.
It will be in strength this time, he said. They will seek to advance 10 paces to start, and then form a crescent as the ranks behind them spill out, spread out. Our flanks need to deny that. Push in along the lightfall itself. Sever the vanguard.
That's asking a lot,
muttered Brevity beside him. Yedan nodded.
Maybe too much, she continued. We're none of us trained as soldiers. We don't know what we're doing.
Captain, the Leosan are no different. Helmed and armed doesn't make an army. They are conscripts. I could see as much the first time.
He chewed on the thought and then added,
soft.
You saying they don't want any of this?
Like us, he replied. They have no choice. We're in a war that began long ago, and it has never ended, Captain.
Pithy says they look no different from the Tistandi, barring their snowy skin.
He shrugged.
Why should that matter? It's all down to disagreeing about how things should be.
We can't win, can we?
He glanced at her.
Among mortals, every victory is temporary. In the end, we all lose.
She spat onto the white sand.
You ain't cheering me at all, sir. If we ain't got no hope of winning against them, what's the point?
Ever won a scrap, Captain? Ever stood over the corpses of your enemy? No? When you do, come find me. Come tell me how sweet victory tastes.
He lifted the sword and pointed down to the breach.
You can win even when you lose. Because even in losing, you might still succeed in making your point, in saying that you refuse the way they want it.
Well now, that makes me feel better.
I can't do the rousing speeches, Captain.
I noticed.
Those words sound hollow, all of them. In fact, I do not believe that I have ever heard the commander or ruler say anything to straighten me up, or make me want to do for them what they wanted done.
So, he said amiably, if I won't die for someone else, how can I ask anyone else to do so?
Then what are we going to die for here?
For yourselves, Captain, each and every one of you. What could be more honest than that?
After a time, she grunted.
I thought it was all about fighting for the soldier beside you, and all that. Not wanting to let them down, I mean.
What you seek not to let down, Captain, is your sense of yourself. How you see yourself, even when you see yourself through the eyes of the people around you.
He shook his head.
I won't argue against that. So much comes down to pride, after all.
So, we're to hold against the Leosan, we're to hold the first shore, out of some kind of feeling of pride?
I would like to hear a truly rousing speech one day, Yedan mused. Just once. Then he sighed. No matter. One can't have everything, can one?
I see him! Coming through!
Yedan started walking down the slope.
Hold back the Lethari until I need them, Captain. Yes, sir.
The Leosan vanguard burst through the breach with a roar. Seeing the shadows wheeling above the Leosan, Brevity flinched.
Dragons, that ain't fair, just ain't.
She turned and made her way down to the Lethari Legion. They were like Pithy now. They had that thing in their eyes. Brevity could not find words to describe it. They'd fought for their lives, but not in that daily struggle to put food on the table, not in those quiet moments when the body surrendered to some illness. This was a sudden thing, a savage thing. That look she saw now, she didn't know what it was, but she wanted some of it.
Errant's nudge. I must be mad.
Charles had always been the older sister, the capable one. When her mother had wandered off in the way drunks did, leaving them on their own, Charles had reached out to take in her two younger brothers. The Sheikh understood the two sides of the shore. The drawing close, the falling apart. Those sides lived in their blood, and in all the ghettos where dwelt the remnants of her people, the fates washed back and forth, and sometimes it was all one could do to simply hang on. She had led them out of childhood, but more than that, she had tried to lead them away from something else, something far crueler. The sense of failure that hung thick in the neighborhood, the kind of failure that slunk through alleys with drawn knives, that stepped over bodies lying in the rubbish. The kind of failure that unleashed hatred upon those who would seek a better life, those who would dare rise above their wretched station. She had seen a clever boy beaten to death outside her shelter, by his cousins. Lethari missions sent people into the communities, building roads out, roads to take the Sheikh away from their misery. It was pointless. Charles had seen as much, again and again. Outsiders never understood how a people could eat themselves from the inside out. She was thinking about that as she set her boots in the sand and adjusted the heavy pike in her hands. Flanked by her brothers, with all of the Sheikh formed up to face this enemy of strangers, they stood on the first shore, bathed in the eerie rain of lightfall, and she wondered if this was to be the last moment for her and the boys. How quickly would her family vanish from the world of the living? Which of them would be the first to fall? Which the last?
I'm scared. By the deeps, I am scared. Capable Charl, oh, see how that light shines on this day. I will try to keep them alive. I will do all I can. Mother, they said they found your body in a ditch outside the town. Where were you going? What road were you building? Cassel, Orus, I love you both.
She felt their eyes as they looked upon her, but she held her gaze fixed on the breach. Someone shouted, "Here they come!" But the cry was unnecessary, as the wound split to the first spear points, and the Leosan surged out with terrifying howls. A tall warrior was in the lead, his face twisted, his eyes lit like fire, his mouth stretched open as he brought up his spear. He was staring at Charles, who stood opposite as he lunged forward. She would have run if a path were open to her. She would have fallen to her knees if mercy were possible. She would have shouted, pleaded for an end to this terrible need to fight, to kill. She would have done anything to end this. Her brothers screamed, and those cries were so raw with terror that Charles felt buffeted, battered by this instant of utter, horrifying vulnerability.
Mother, weaving, stumbling down the road, her clothes reeking, her breaths a wet rattle. The Sheikh cannot run from themselves.
Charles!
She lifted the pike at the last moment. The warrior had not even noticed the weapon, or its deadly length. Even as he lifted his spear, the broad iron head took him just beneath his sternum. The impact rocked her back, thundered through her bones. The surprise in his face made her want to weep. so childlike, so helpless. His sagging weight pulled the pike down. She tore it free, her breaths coming so fast the world was spinning.
He didn't see it. How could he not have seen it?
All at once, there was fighting along the line, spreading out from the center. The Liosan were trying to push them back. Their fury deafened her. They fought like rabid dogs. She stabbed out again and again with the pike. The point scored off shields was batted aside by bronze-sheathed shafts. Liosan ducked past it, only to be met by the hacking swords of her brothers. Piss drenched the inside of her left thigh. Shame, oh shame! They yielded a step, the entire line, as if by command. But she heard nothing beyond the roar engulfing her, the clash of weapons, the grunts and gasps. This was a tide driving them back, and like the sand beneath them, the shake were crumbling. The pike's long shaft was slick with blood. The point was wrapped in gore. The muscles of her forearms and shoulders burning, she raised the weapon once more, saw a face, and stabbed into it. Edge grating past teeth, biting into the back of her mouth, the flaring flanges slicing through cheeks. Blood poured from the Liosan's nose, misted up into his eyes. He snapped his head back, choking, dropping his weapons as he fell to his knees. His hands went to his shattered mouth, seeking to hold in place the dangling lower jaw, the flaps of tongue. Cassel lunged low and pushed his sword's point into the Liosan's neck. And then her brother was falling. An animal cry came from his throat and he twisted as a Liosan advanced to stand over him, grinding her spear point down through Cassel, who writhed like a pinned eel. Charles swung the pike and she screamed as the point slashed the Liosan just under her chin, opening her windpipe. Hands took Cassell's ankles and dragged him back. A stranger came up to take her brother's place. No, not a stranger. A marled sword blade swung past her, caught a Liosan closing on her, sliced through him from shoulder to hip. The back swing sent the top half of her head and helm spinning away. A third swing severed two hands gripping a spear. Three fallen Liosan, opening a gap.
"Follow me,"
Yedan Derig said, stepping forward. And around Sharl and Oruth, the watch drew up, huge soldiers in heavy armor, blackened shields like an expanding wall, long-bladed swords lashing out. As they advanced, they carried Sharl and her brother with them into the face of the Liosan. Pithy reached Brevity. Her face was flushed, slick with sweat, and there was blood on her sword. Gasping, she said,
"Two companies of Lethary, sister, to relieve the center of the Shake line. They've been savaged." "He's pushing straight for the wound," Brevity said. "Is that right? That's Yedan down there, isn't it? Him and half his watch. Gods, it's as if the Liosan are melting away." "Two companies, Brev. We're going to split the enemy on this side, but that means we need to push right up to the fucking hole, right? And then hold it for as long as we need to cut them all down on the flanks."
Licking dry lips, Brevity nodded.
"I'll lead them. Yes, I'm relieving you here, love. I'm ready to drop. So, what are you waiting for? Go!"
Pithy watched Brev lead 100 Lethary down to the berm. Her heart was finally slowing its mad jackrabbit dance. Jamming the point of her sword in the sand, she turned to regard the remaining Lethary. Nods answered her. They were ready. They'd tasted it, and they wanted to taste it again.
"Yes, I know. It terrifies us. It makes us sick inside, but it's like painting the world in gold and diamonds."
From the breach, the roar was unceasing, savage as a storm against cliffs.
"Dear ocean, then, call my soul. I would swim the waters again. Let me swim the waters again."